shouts of space.
Welcome to Rational Face. Thanks, Mike, for talking over me. Let's do that again. Are we recording yet? Are we on? Okay. Got a hot mic over here. Welcome to Rational Face, third episode.
Are we on?
Yes, now we are. We weren't before, but now we are. And Mike, you want to do the little introduction?
Yeah, so this is our third podcast, but it's our first in our series where we talk with our permabloggers, and we're starting with the ones that we've had around the longest and moving to the young ones. And so today we have with us Rational Face's very own Eliza Roxy Snow Smith, also known as Melody Nui.
I don't deserve that, but thanks. I'll take it.
Well, I'm reading Brian Hale's stuff. I think this is where it was Brian Hale's stuff. And he said in there that towards the end of Eliza Snow's life, she started signing it with the last name Smith. So I think it's kind of cool.
Anyway. Oh, that's nice.
Useless information. All right. Well, I decided, Melody, to go way back in the Wayback Machine and figure out when Paul and I discovered the woman, Melody Nui. It was on January 11th, 2013. It's a long time ago.
It seems like only yesterday.
Yeah, doesn't it? So what it was is we had a post written by Trevor Prince about baby blessings, and you had left a comment on there that kind of blew my mind. And so I sent you a message saying, hey, I really liked what you wrote. Would you be interested in writing for us? And you said, heck yeah. And then you wrote for us a while, and then in April of 2013 is when Paul and I came up with the idea of having permabloggers, and you and Emmett Ravs were the first ones that signed on for that. And so there's the backstory.
Good times, Michael. Good times.
Jess, it is. Hey, Pablo, do you got a question for Melody?
I do have a question for Melody.
Well, how about if I tell you about my first experience with Rational Faiths?
Hey, oh, that's good.
Hey, yeah. Melody, I got a question.
Yeah.
How was your first experience with Rational Faiths?
I honestly do not remember how I found you. It was just a stroll around the Bloggernacle, I think. And what I liked was I instantly felt like these were intelligent people who were thoughtful and probing and obviously more progressive, but I felt very at home at Rational Faiths because not everybody has a PhD. And some of the other sites I'd visited, although I'm an intelligent woman and I'm thoughtful, felt a little bit intimidated, and this felt like a place where I could come to get a wider range of perspectives. So I really liked it for that reason.
Nice.
Now you got a lot of contributions from lots of different PhDs, but a year ago, not quite as many.
Well, that's cool. Well, that makes me feel nice. Thank you, Melody.
You're welcome.
More of approachable, I guess.
In some ways. And now that I'm more familiar with even some of the individuals that are highly educated and highly academic, I'm not nearly so intimidated, but I still feel like this blog is really kind of a welcome table for a wide swath of Latter-day Saints and Mormons.
Cool.
Yeah, we try to keep it that way. Now, Melody, where would you like on the faith spectrum, Mormon faith spectrum, what would you call yourself? Where would you be?
Well, when I first started reading on the Bloggernacle, I had no idea what all the abbreviations meant. And I still don't pay a lot of attention to that. But I still don't really know what a total believing Mormon means. But I do believe that Joseph Smith had a vision, and as a result, he opened up the world through his own pursuit of truth to truths that really are new and more enlightening. And so I believe it is a restored gospel, the restored gospel. And I'm active in my ward. I teach 12-year-olds in Sunday school, and I attend the temple. And although, like many women I know, I have some discomfort with what I see as some problems with gender inequality in the way the story is portrayed, I love the temple. I'm an active Latter-day Saint with a testimony.
Cool. Oh, okay.
What do you think Joseph Smith's greatest contribution to the world was in your eyes?
Well, I think he was incredibly brave, and one of his greatest contributions, besides opening the heavens in a way that I think had not been done, from what I know about religious history, in many, many, many years, he was willing to. Oh goodness, this is just so self-evident, but he was willing to think outside of the proverbial box and to trust his own revelations, even as a young man, which is very impressive. And so I feel like he is an amazing example of the power of having a personal connection with God, and that having that sort of a connection can impact the world, not just your own life, but the people that you're connected with and your community in a big way.
That was good. Yeah, I like that. Now, I want to ask you a question about your poetry.
Yes.
So how does writing poetry connect you to your faith, or does it even do that?
I feel like writing poetry, and I think this applies to many artists, poets, writers, any form of art, if you have a spiritual practice or a spiritual belief, that so with poetry, it's impossible really for me in most cases to separate my faith, both my faith in the LDS Church and I should really say specifically the doctrine of Christ, but also my spirituality, because art tends to be an expression of things that are often unconscious. And I feel like a lot of the spiritual life and the spiritual realm is accessed through the unconscious. So when an artist or a writer brings something up from there, it's almost as if there's a, you know, there's a well that connects you to the world of the spirit, and it's from that well that I draw when I write, typically.
Mm-hmm. So it's a religious practice for you, like prayer, yes, might be, or meditation for other,
yes,
people.
Yes, I would say that's the case. And I would say that may not apply to every single poem I write, but the act of writing it's an act of creation. So, yes, I would say that's true.
I like that idea, act of creation, yeah. Now, Paul and I aren't particularly artsy at all. So what do you have, what would you tell guys like us? Is there hope for us?
Well.
Because I read your stuff and I like it, right? I like it, but I can't tell you why I like it. And I don't have the gift to dissect poetry out, and I definitely don't write it.
It's probably, your experience is probably the most common experience of most of our culture, because especially in the United States, we're not a poetry loving people as a group. If you go to some parts of Europe or other countries, there may be a little more respect and understanding for poetry and other types of art. But I would say that what you said was probably the most important part, is that you can recognize when you like something or when it speaks to you. And I don't know that it's really necessary to always understand what it is you like about it. I will say that, as with anything, if you have a desire to believe that you can understand the poetry, let that desire work in you. And anyone can understand poetry, I believe, if they take time to sit with it, because it comes from a place typically in the poet that can communicate with a more ethereal or unconscious place of the receiver. And for people who are particularly intellectual and really live more in an intellectual space than an emotional space, it just takes a little bit of time and practice.
Okay, so I'm sorry, Matt. I was listening, but then you heard that phone ring, so I had to hit mute.
If you find a poem that you find especially interesting, or that your gut tells you this is important to me, and you are willing to take time with the poem, either read it and then think about it for a while, or read it, leave it, and come back to it later while it's percolating on the back burner.
Yeah.
I think anyone can understand poetry, most poetry, if they will take time to let it sink in.
Do you feel like you have to, when someone reads your poem or your poetry, do you feel like explaining what you're trying to say to them takes away from that, because maybe they have a different meaning of what you were trying to say, or that poem has a different meaning for them, and so when you explain it to them, it like shatters all their hopes and dreams of what what it meant to them, you know?
That is a very good question, and this is a question that you will hear discussed, and different authors or artists at different times may give different answers, because there are two answers to that question. Number one, I've had people tell me that they were very grateful that I gave them an explanation of the poem, because it allowed them to experience it more fully. Mm-hmm. And my poetry, honestly, my poetry is really pretty straightforward. It's very accessible, most of it. And that's the natural way I write things. Some poets are much more obscure and sometimes more difficult to read and or understand. Yeah. Which is also good. So back to your question. First off, to not explain the poem is a gift to the reader, because it does allow them to interpret the poem and to have their own experience with it. And that's what art is supposed to be. I express something from my place of understanding. You perceive it from your place of understanding. And there may be something in the translation that completely alters the meaning from where it came from me, so that it has a different meaning for you. So that's the benefit of not explaining a poem. Mm-hmm. However, some people, so many times, have said, it helped me for you to explain it. It helped me to understand it better. And so the question could be answered either way, and it really is highly individual depending on the people involved and the circumstances for the poetry.
Right, right, right.
That was insightful, because as you were saying that, immediately what jumped into my head was the whole concept of revelation, of God kind of, he says something somehow, however that happens, and then the recipient gets it, right? But what the recipient receives might be different than what God actually spoke, or let's be nicer, what our heavenly parents actually speak, right?
Right.
And it's kind of, it almost echoes of that a little bit to me as you were describing that. Would you be interested in reading a poem for us?
I will. In fact, I decided to just read the one that Paul said that he had liked from the blog.
Yeah, which one is it?
It's Mother's Milk.
Oh, yeah, that one's good.
And since we're kind of, at least in some of the Mormon community I'm connected with, there is a bit of a Heavenly Mother focus or awakening lately, it seems like. So this is called Mother's Milk, and I will read the poem, and we can talk about it after.
Yeah, I like that.
I miss her breast today, her heart pulsing against my cheek. She unlatches me, gives me to the care of my brother, her firstborn son. She is weaning me. I am weeping mother's milk. The quiet space after the poem is very valuable, so thank you for letting it be quiet.
Oh yeah, I didn't know what to say. I just kind of like, yeah, that's good, and so I'm not going to say anything.
So the quiet space is really important. You know, I notice in sacrament meetings after choir performances or even testimonies, there often is not enough quiet space. And art deserves it. So
yeah, there's a quiet, yeah. Sometimes I just want to do some clapping though at the same time, you know.
Well, yeah, that's a good thing.
I was like,
true.
Yeah. Good job.
Hallelujah.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, good job. That was beautiful, you know. Yeah. Sometimes it's nice to have some quiet space too. The reason I liked it, the visual was so real to me. You know, I have four children. Obviously, you can hear that sometimes in the recording. But the visual for me was real as far as weaning a child. And then the visual, to me, it also was, you know, because I have four boys. And so passing that responsibility over to, you know, an older brother to watch over the younger sibling, that, you know, it kind of hit me.
Wow.
As you know, in that way. So it was nice for me, and it was real for me, and that's why I think I liked it so much.
Good. Thank you. And that makes sense.
And the reason too that poetry is so great is it's so tight, you know? The words are, you have to choose your words so carefully because they carry so much weight. Each word carries so much weight, right? And so
true.
Yeah, and so I just really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Good. Thank you. Yeah. This poem too, I wish I could remember how or when it occurred to me, but it felt very vivid. You know, sometimes in life we feel like grown-ups, but I'll be honest with you, sometimes I do not feel like a grown-up. I feel vulnerable and frightened sometimes and confused, and there is something about the idea that some of that confusion and fear might be minimized if I had greater access or a greater connection to a female God. And so this just felt like, oh, so this is, for whatever reason, this is what has happened. There was a time when I was connected to her, just in the ways I was connected to Heavenly Father. And I'm not connected to her that way now, and none of us can be. I mean, this feels like coming from the presence of the Mother and Father, mm-hmm. and having to be away from them. And it's painful sometimes. And you know that, see, because I am a mother and I've nursed my babies who are now all adults, I felt that, I remember that, that weaning too, and it wasn't easy for either of us.
Oh, definitely.
So.
And, you know, our last baby, number four is our last baby, and so everything's like, this is the last time we're going to do
this. Yes.
This is the last time. This is the last time I'm going to stay up till 4 a.m.
Yes. Enjoy it. Enjoy it while you can, Paul.
I did not enjoy it last night. but yeah, there's from both sides, definitely. And I think it speaks to certain periods in our time also where there's a disconnect with our mothers here on earth, where we're just like, you know, she's not important to me, probably in the teenage years where we're, mm-hmm. you know, there's a little rebellious, you know, line going through us, and we're more with our or siblings or friends or whatever. And so there's that there too, you know, as she kind of turns over her responsibility, not really her responsibility, but, you know, her
care of the child,
care of the child to, yeah, to other people. And yeah, so, yeah, it's very real for me. So
good.
Yeah. Loved
glad
it.
You liked it.
Loved good. It.
All right. Got another question for you, Melody.
Yes.
You ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So, so when I read your poetry and then what you, hold on a second, my 8-year-old needs me.
We're going to say prayers soon.
Okay, I'll be up in just a minute, okay, honey? I love you. Okay, sweetie. I'll be up in a little bit.
This is my favorite part of the podcast.
So in your writing and then your specifically your poetry, because you don't, for our blog, you haven't written just poetry, but mm-hmm. I think that's yeah, what I, well, that's what I see you guys doing mostly though. Anyways, it's certainly evident that you're writing that faith informs your poetry. But I'm curious if you could articulate the reverse, how poetry informs your faith. In other words, does art or the creation of art affect how you worship?
Does the creation of art or does my art and my involvement with poetry affect how I worship?
Yeah.
I would say it does, in that writing poetry opens me to ideas and truth that I don't find in church.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel that poetry has a direct relationship to expanding my awareness and my understanding of principles of which I'm already aware. And also, sometimes beginning to suggest ideas about principles that I really haven't been exposed to or introduced to before.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
No, that does, yeah.
Just because it's that same process of this well somewhere inside that is connected to something that is not me, but that comes out through me as I try to express what I'm feeling. And so that's how it affects the way I worship, is okay, that I feel like it brings new awareness and enlightenment that I can bring to
very
my,
well.
Yeah.
Mike's first poetry experience was from that show, Different Strokes. Do you remember that show?
Yes.
And I think Willis was trying to write a poem for his girlfriend. Or this girl he wanted to be his girlfriend,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yeah.
And it was along the lines of, Lisa, 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 would you like a piece of pizza? So it was pretty direct there. Pretty
There's good. A place for that. There's a place for those kind of poems.
Yeah. Different so, strokes, yeah.
And, yeah.
And I think what's his name was like, what you talking about, Willis? And then, but the, yeah, that was our... But, yeah, I mean, as far as poetry goes, I love it. I was a Spanish major in college, and so tons of poetry. And
Pablo Neruda, you probably are familiar with.
Oh, yeah, big time. And have you seen that movie El Postino?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Loved it. Highly recommend. Yeah, if you haven't seen it, audience, whoever's listening, to our 5 listeners out there,
yes,
El Postino.
Yes. We can all talk about it later, yeah, the five of us.
Yeah, El Postino is an amazing film. It's in Spanish, but, you know, it's subtitled out, but it's mm-hmm. it's a beautiful, and you really get a good introduction to Pablo Neruda's work. So, mm-hmm. highly recommend that if
loved
you want.
Loved it.
Yeah. Mike, I was telling Melody about your first, I don't know if you remember this, your first experience with poetry with Different Strokes and Willis.
Yes. Did you? Were you really saying that?
Yeah. And I, for the record, let's see if you remember the poem. How
it wasn't Willis. It was Arnold was feeding his friend lines of poetry, right?
Oh, was it Arnold? Maybe I'm gonna.
Yeah, it was Arnold feeding his friend, and he had like an earpiece or something, and it was, Lisa, 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 would you like a piece of pizza?
Yes.
You got it.
That was one. Nailed my story, that one. My story was wrong, but you probably remember better. But, yeah.
Speaking of fine poetry, my eight-year-old – I missed prayer, by the way. I didn't get up in time. But they're in bed, and my eight-year-old, her nightgown right now is the T-shirt that Paul and I bought when we went to an MC Hammer Boys to Men concert. And the one she's wearing is MC Hammer, the Too Legit to Quit tour. Now, there's poetry.
That was some bad poetry.
That was really bad.
We have to pray just to make it today, yo.
Yeah. My daughters love that one, that they actually rap that. And it's okay. It's okay. I'm okay. I'm okay with it. Can I ask you another question, Melody, before we cut this?
Sure.
Actually, I have two more. I'll ask this one, though. So I noticed when you were talking about poetry, you used the word creation a lot,
mm-hmm.
which it brings a couple of thoughts. One is just me being a father and Paul being a father and you being a mother, the act of creation and bringing new life. It kind of evokes that idea. This idea of worship and creation, there seems to be something there in what you were speaking, and somehow those two are intertwined. Do you see what I'm trying to get at? I'm not articulating very well.
I think any act of creation, every act of creation, this is just my own gospel of me, any act of creation, any new thought, any new work of art, mm-hmm. any seed that sprouts, any, you know, union of a man and a woman to make a child, I think any act of creation connects us to God.
Mm.
And so it's impossible to create and not be connected to God. And so to create art, to create poetry, to write, again, for me, now I don't know how atheists feel about it when they write poetry, you know, it's probably a different experience for them. But for me, every act of creation connects me to God. So I can't separate the two. And I mean that in a general sense. So that if I'm working on a specific poem, if I want to express something that's not necessarily spiritual, I may not feel the profound relationship between worship and poetry or creation, but it's still there because I'm creating something new.
Yeah, yeah. Now, follow-up question now. So the first time I met you in life, in real life, was when we were in Utah, and we all went over to Paul's house to eat, and you were there. You were making a fruit salad, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay. You know what I noticed first about you?
What?
Were your jeans you were wearing, and then when I saw you at Sun, because they were like yellow.
Yes.
And then when you were at Sunstone, you had like an orangish red one.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Is that your thing?
Awesome
jeans like that.
I like bright colors, and I like awesome jeans, and I partly owe a deep debt of gratitude to my 25-year-old daughter for telling me, get those lemon yellow jeans.
Mm. Yeah.
And I get compliments everywhere I go for those. So
oh, you do?
Thanks well, that, to Sarah.
It doesn't feel cheap then that everyone does it? Because it really, that came from the heart.
I know, Mike.
All right.
Fancy pants. Just call me Melody Fancy Pants.
Fancy Pants. No, I loved it. All right, I'm done. You got anything else, Brother Barker?
No. Thanks, Melody, for your art and your expression and through poetry. It's awesome.
Yes.
And even though sometimes even though sometimes I don't understand what you're saying, I have to go back and read it a couple times and, you know, let it stew for a bit and try to pull out what I think you're trying to say. Yeah.
Well, thank you. And thank you for being my friends and inviting me to to write for Rational Faiths and for being open to the idea of having poetry on the blog, which was just really nice. Was really nice. I've enjoyed it, and I love you guys.
Oh, thanks.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
We're going to miss you. So for all our readers, Melody is leaving us, but she said...
What'd she say? Because now I can't hear you.
Paul?
Okay. Yeah.
You ruined the moment, Paul. Gosh. I asked.
When I say something, it means you guys cut out. And so okay. If I'm not hearing it, that means it's not being recorded. So if I ruin the moment, then obviously there was no moment to ruin because...
No.
Apparently. If you didn't hear it, it didn't exist.
You ruined the moment. Do you guys want to hear a story? Yeah, sure. Should we start recording again, Paul?
It's been recording.
Okay.
I haven't stopped.
Who does the editing on this? They are going to have a heyday.
Micah's going to love it. But the good news is it's short. So here's Melody, she promised Paul. I'm not sure where it got cut out. She said she'll come write for us still every so often, even though she's not one of our official permas anymore. But
I have to tell you, though, Mike, I love being called emeritus because... where else is a woman emeritus in our church?
True. No, that's nowhere.
Fantastic.
Nowhere. And you still, I like how you still jump in on our little permablogger.
Well, yeah, Facebook I got to be careful about that apparently.
Why? What happened?
Oh, I don't know. I think I might have offended Viliami or something.
Oh, no, you didn't. No.
No,
Viliami is our tongue and bull. And that's just the way he is.
Okay, no, cool. That's
good. You're good. Okay, awkward moment. Ready? So I think a month ago, so the kids were still – no, the kids were supposed to be in bed. And Kathy and I were, you know, kissing, but we were still on our feet. But I hadn't locked the door yet, right?
It's in our, there? Hello?
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, I can hear everybody.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Melody, are you okay?
Yes, now I can hear you.
Okay. So things were moving with my wife and I. We were still upright. But I hadn't locked.
Do I need to provide music while you.
Please do.
Bow, bow.
Yeah.
Bow,
bow. This is. Yeah, it's not that exciting because it's marriage, right? So, anyway, so we were still vertical. door was closed, not locked. Our daughters know when the door is closed, you knock. It's just a good rule. Mm-hmm. So. The oldest one.
There's no sock on the door.
No sock on the door. So the oldest one just opens the door, and I was close enough to the door where I quickly cut it, you know, knocked it shut with my foot, and I open it up, and I wasn't yelling. I go, we told you to knock, and then she starts crying, and Kathy gets angry at me, and I go, what did I do? She goes, you made her cry. Go apologize to her. And I go, I've told her to knock, and so. Our daughter's like, I go, why didn't you knock? She goes, well, I didn't hear. I heard you guys in there and the lights were off. And I'm thinking, exactly. That's when you knock. So I had to go in there and I had to apologize. I didn't do anything wrong. Anyways, that's my awkward moment. You wrap it up, Paul.
How are you supposed to wrap it up with that?
It's very awkward, really.
Yeah. It wasn't that awkward. I could go into more details if you wanted to.
No, that's okay.
It would be really awkward.
Feel more awkward.
Yeah. I don't know if our goal is to feel awkward.
No.
But that was awesome anyway.
Yeah.
That was good. Those are some of the best stories of you know, the family life.
Family
yes.
life. Family
yes.
Life. Sneaking in there, you know, yep. a little yep. when you can, whatever.
Knock on the door, please.
Knock on the door. Well, maybe you just need a little sock sometime, you know, a little or a tie on the doorknob. College rules. Whatever. Oh, here's a story of awkward moment, then we'll close it out with this. I swear when my wife and I were dating, so she was in my bedroom, you know, I was at BYU, so you're not supposed to be in the back room, whatever. And I swear we were reading our scriptures in my bed. I promise you. My roommate brings the elder's corn present back to my room to ask me if I had a certain cable for a TV. And there she is in my bed, and I'm just like, oh my gosh.
Reading scriptures in your bed.
I just literally put the scriptures down, and then they came in. And so it would have been better if I had had the scriptures out, and you're like, hey, look, we're just reading our scriptures in here. We're not making out for 2 hours. I swear. All right. Well, I hope That's you guys enjoyed the podcast. Melody, sorry you came. We grabbed your beautiful poetry, and hopefully we didn't drag it in the mud in the conversation.
there are poems written about those awkward moments. Many.
Awesome. Hope we'll see you around the Bloggernacle.
Great.
And we appreciate you. And
thank you.
That's all. We'll wrap it up.
Good night.
Thanks for listening.
Peace out.